It's Monday, March 10th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 332 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 39 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
This is Beth.
My name is Pat.
We have a big announcement. Actually, this is an announcement that in many ways is probably about 8 years in the making, which is after a whole lot of jacking around and procrastination and very flimsy excuses, Fear the Boot has finally put out a publication.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right, so what's available? We just put out a book that's an anthology of fiction, and the book is called Sojourn. And I will put a link to a thread in the forums in the show notes. And if you look in that thread, I have put in there every place you can find the book. You can find it in print and electronically in a whole slew of places, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, some of it's only electronic, like Apple iBooks, Kobo, Drive-Thru. There's tons of places you can pick it up from. So here's the thing. If you've been listening to Fear the Boot and you've been enjoying what we've been doing, we would really appreciate it if you would consider picking up a copy of this book, and if you enjoy it, leaving us a review so that other people would grab it as well. And if you say, well, wait a minute, I ain't got the money to pick up this book, I totally get that. But if you could at least pass on the word through social media to your friends and family, then we would really appreciate that as well. To tell you a little bit about this book, it's 15 short stories by 15 authors. The only thing they have in common is they're all about science fiction and fantasy. They cover a diversity of topics, and I mean they are really diverse. Some of them take place in prehistory, some of them take place in the far future. The story that I wrote is about an alien invasion. There is a story that Shannon Dixon, aka Mrs. Lime Wielding Ninja, wrote about a theologians conference about trying to reconcile human theology with the existence of aliens. And these stories have all been written by people that are either hosts, community members, or professionals that have been interviewed by Fear the Boot. So everyone in this book is somehow affiliated with Fear the Boot. And in case you're curious, the two professionals we got for this book are Matt Forbeck and Jim Lauder. And we are already working on a Sojourn Volume 2 that we're thinking is going to be even bigger and probably going to grab another industry pro or two. But this is a great book. I want you guys to know that we got professional cover art. We had multiple professional editors working on it. This is not some one-off book. If you've come to expect quality from Fear the Boot, then you can continue to expect quality, and we're very proud of what it's like. So if you've got a couple bucks and want to support what Fear the Boot does, then please consider taking a look at the show notes and picking up a copy of Sojourn. I don't think you'll regret it. You'll love these stories. And once again, you can get it electronic or in print. And electronically, you can get it on just about any platform you want. All right, so topic for today, we're going to talk about GMPCs. But let me specify what I mean by a GMPC. Because there are two types of GMPCs. The first...
And they're both awful.
And the first salvo is launched.
Yeah. Number one, I think we're going to universally agree, is awful. Number two is where the divisions may begin. In fact, I hope they begin, because otherwise it's going to be a boring episode.
Yeah, it is.
All right. But type number one is a character or an NPC, I guess you could say, that is so tight with the GM's own desires and power fantasies and whatever, that they're an extension of the GM's wankery into the game. We typically on Fear the Boot shorthand these GMPCs to Baron Von Badasses. These are the guys that always...
Gee, you never came across one of those before.
Me either.
They're always perfect. They always know what's going on. They always win. They're the bad guy you can't touch, or the good guy that's always a step ahead of you in solving the plot for you.
And you want to punch him in the mouth.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone affiliated with this podcast that would defend it outside of Johan, perhaps to be comedically ironic. Hmm. So we're going to skip right past that.
We are in full agreement, universally awful.
Yes. In fact, if you look at the description of Baron Von Badass in the Fear of the Boots store, I don't remember what it says, but it's something about the ultimate in poorly designed NPCs or something to that effect.
Nice.
All right. But there's another type of GMPC Wayne forwarded us an email from a gentleman by the name of James Mahoney. And the basic question that James was asking about, because he talked about both types of GMPCs, the one I just mentioned, but also the one I'm getting to, which is sometimes you look at a party and you feel the need as a game master to include a persistent NPC who is accompanying the party. So in a way, they are somewhere between PC and NPC. And so since they're controlled by the GM, I think we could fairly call them a form of GMPC. But the purpose of this character and the way this character is executed is not that they're the top dog and have everything figured out and they've got all the powers and they're level 20 while you're level 5 and all that kinds of crap. Think of it this way. Let's say you're just playing. Let's go back to good old D&D. You're playing a D&D game and you got a fighter, mage, thief. The GM decides to throw in
a bard. Because yes. That's what you need to fill out that party. Yeah.
And then fighter, mage, thief.
Yes.
An NPC cleric, for example, to cover the healing, or someone who's got...
But bards have healing. Okay. That's all you need.
They have cure light wounds.
All right, fine. They throw in a cure heavy bard. If you're playing Battletech, you've got three players. For anyone not familiar with Battletech, the mechs tend to move in lance is a 4. So you got three players. You decide to throw in an NPC. Yeah, a bard to pilot the 4.
Because somebody needs to provide entertainment through the intercom system.
Hearts and minds, right.
So can't she pilot a mech while playing a lute?
Well, there is a mech that has something called the C3 system, which does provide kind of a vague buff to the entire rest of the lance.
And then there's the lute man variant, to the hatchet man.
That's that's what I roll with.
Yes.
The hatchet is awesome, but the loot is epic.
But here's kind of the question that James asked, which is, how do you handle these kinds of characters because of the fact that they invariably share headspace with the GM? And so there's really an easy way to fall into one of two extremes, which is on extreme A, you really don't develop them as a character. You keep them in the background. They're purely mechanical. They throw out the healing spells when they need to. They toss in the long-range fire support for going to Battletech. Whatever it is they do. If it's Star Trek, maybe they're the medical officer, and so they heal you up after you got shot by a disruptor.
Always the healer.
Okay, fine.
No, I mean, it always is the healer.
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing your example.
Okay.
It is always
all right,
the healer.
Then I'll roll on from there.
You're pretty much right. In my experience, it's always a healer.
I've never had to hold out my hat and say, please, someone play a wizard.
I guess I'm one
Or the fighter.
You know, this is why I do so well in both role-playing games and MMOs, is I'm that one weirdo. And I guess I shouldn't say I'm the one weirdo. I'm part of the minority of weirdos
that likes to be a healer.
That likes to play the healers.
I'm one of those weirdos, too.
I am, too.
Jeez, Beth, why don't you ever play a healer?
I do.
Shit.
Sexual healer.
Not on the podcast.
Yeah. That's also a bard.
You can go to one extreme where you really don't play the character at all apart from their function. Or there's an opposite extreme where you try to develop their character. But this gets kind of difficult because you as a GM suddenly are stuck role-playing with yourself, assuming the party's not interacting with the character. You might give that character too much spotlight, too much personality. And also there's we'll get to that here in a second.
And the second salvo.
There's the danger also that because of the fact that the party gets stuck, or you perceive them to be stuck, even if they're not, because this PC/NPC shares headspace with the GM, you use them to nudge along plot points you might not otherwise reveal to the party. All right, now before we get to those points, John has a different salvo to launch, which is he thinks this is a bad idea at the fundamental level. So,
I just intimated it quite thoroughly. Like, you're in the same head as your GMPC, so it's up to you to either solve your own puzzles and roleplay with yourself, or just do nothing with this character and exist as a mechanical pressure valve for whatever particular part of the party template that your players are missing. If there's one thing I hate more than two NPCs talking to each other, it's a GMPC and an NPC talking to each other.
Do you feel it is impossible to strike any kind of a middle balance? Or do you feel it's perhaps possible?
You certainly need to have NPCs. I've never played in a game where the PCs were the only entities in the world. But I believe that it is impossible to have a character who is a persistent, developed, significantly contributory member of the party group, such that you would call him a GMPC and have that character be an asset to the game instead of a burden, small or large.
Go on, develop this.
Well, that's my conclusion. Well, what do you want by
Well, I guess here's my question.
They either know too much or they don't know enough, inevitably. And they lead to GMs playing with themselves, which is really boring.
Not for the GM.
Well, yeah, exactly. But no, you gotta no be one kidding wants to me. Watch that.
As a GM, there is nothing I hate more than RPing with myself.
I was talking about masturbation.
Oh, okay. That should not shock me.
No.
But within the context of gaming.
Certainly not during an online game.
Yeah.
Pat.
Yeah, he wasn't masturbating.
I wasn't masturbating.
No. But
stop.
Beth.
Stop.
Yeah, you helped sink
my stop, that is.
You helped sink my first online game.
Sorry.
So anyway.
It's Pat's fault.
I love online games.
Yeah.
Those are everyone looks at you if you do it in person games.
That's right. Well, you know. I'm an exhibitionist, I don't care.
All right. So
what are we talking about again?
Shut up.
So back to masturbation.
Pray to God my mother doesn't hear this. Which is to
say, playing a character in your own game.
Exactly. Yeah.
I am going to fully concede that the things that you have described are possible. And indeed, I will go beyond possible to say that they are likely. But I don't think that they are inevitable.
Do you think that there's a sufficiently clear and present danger of them such that going there is a bad idea?
No. Really? I do think there is a sufficiently clear and present danger that you really have to walk into that understanding it's a minefield and respecting
what
it as a
minefield. What is the benefit
of
attempting to pass that minefield? What can a GMPC give to the group that justifies the risk, the near certainty, I would say?
Well, here's the thing. I'm sitting here listening to you present your case, and I'm thinking of examples that I've come across in our role-playing group, and I'm going to throw this to Pat because you played with Dub longer, but I would say dullness.
Yeah, that's what I was going to regard.
Was a huge critical part of the party, was a very well developed character, but was not the plot wagon.
My take on this is what you have to have basically an understanding in your playing group with the players and the GM. And for us, it just happened naturally. And that understanding was basically that, yes, this NPC, this GMPC is. It's a character that's played by the GM, so we're not going to depend on him to ask him questions, you know, about what's going
right.
on or
so
whatever.
You have to but at the same time, we're not.
Wasn't lobotomized.
He just was a member of the party. But on the flip side of that, it was well played by our GM. The way he approached it, the way he played the character, he did it very well. But we also, as players, you know, knew the thing of, yes, this is the GM character, so we're not necessarily going to go, oh, we're stuck. What do we do, Delnus?
There was kind of a thing.
So
there was kind of the unspoken agreement that if we had gone and said, hey, Delnus, what should we do now? Dub would have shut us down. We're like, we're not doing that.
But, you know, you didn't have to. And it depends. I think it
never
also
said.
It'll depend on what character it is. And again, for us, this was a healer because we were short a healer. And I think that's also important to say. Why are we talking about these characters in the first place? Why are they necessary? And largely the necessity of them will be you've got, well, like you said earlier, Dan, you know, you've got three people playing. You've got a fighter, a wizard, and a ranger or whatever. You have no heals. You need some heals.
Drop
or you need
a cure thief, light
or you,
wounds
you need
wand.
Something.
Right. Make it an intelligent cure light wounds wand. That would be hilarious. All that right. would beat the crap out of Clarak.
I think there is an important question right there. And you guys got to something else, which I will come back to in a second here, because I think it's a great point. But there is a very foundational point that all three of you guys have raised, which is you have to start with a question of why is this character there at all? If you cannot come up with a compelling reason why the character is there, don't do it.
Yeah.
And I've played under GMs where they put the character there, and let's put aside for a moment the worst case scenarios here of the GM power wank. Let's talk about GMs who did it with the best of intentions. In many cases, I felt like they were doing it because they wanted to GM, but they also wanted to play.
Ah, yes.
And so they threw in a player character, and I'm going to call it a player character here, not a GMPC, that just so happened to be played by the GM.
The poor perma GM who can never find another GM. My heart reaches out to all of you in Listenerville. Well, I was once one.
But I've seen this even in groups that had many GMs, where I saw a player character, quote unquote, played by the GM that I really could tell was just the GM was enjoying the story, was enjoying maybe the tableside RP, and rather than just kind of sitting back and enjoying that or maybe throwing in some NPCs, they really wanted to be a fixed part of that. And so
it's still a plot you have to design. You're just giving yourself the stranger.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not sure I use that phrase, but I'm not disagreeing with you. I think you do have to look at why does this person exist at all. You know, for example, if I look at a game like Battletech, so much of that game is designed around the idea, especially if you're playing Innersphere, of there's a four-man lance. True. Or clans of five-man Star, Comstar, six-man
Ooh,
lance.
Clans.
Yeah, I agree.
Yay, Comstar.
But I think in those cases, it would be really hard. I mean, you could do it, but I think it would stretch credulity a little bit and stretch balance in a few places to have a three-man lance. You have to have
that. Yeah, but you can plot around it. Okay, act one of the game is Lieutenant Butterbars getting his mech blown the hell up with a triple engine shot crit.
Butterbar.
Now you're down to three and you lost your CO. Go. That's compelling and perfectly in universe.
And I'm not disagreeing with that. I really think this is something that you have to look at situationally. See, look, is this something that is really necessary, cannot be covered by the plot, and cannot be covered by giving some kind of a boon to the existing player characters, which could be an intelligent wand of cure light wounds. Yes. It could be, I'll back off the enemies a bit. There's any number. I'll give you an extra skill. There's nobody here who speaks this language. Well, rather than throw in a translator, fine. One of you speaks the skill, or you have a robot that translates for you, whatever. And I will fully concede that I think 90-some-odd% of situations can be resolved
like all
that way.
Of them.
But let's say for a minute that you don't have that. Now, let me move to something that you guys said. I think a big part of that is there has to be a lot of control from the GM side, which I'll talk about here in a second. But you guys raised a great point, which is there has to be control from the player side, mm-hmm. that the players do not treat the player character
like an oracle.
Yes.
Unless it's a Pathfinder oracle and they need debuffs.
Or players treat them not per se like an oracle, but they just treat them in a way that they would not treat any other PC at the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They go to them in the oracle case for information. They either over role play with them, hoping to get something from the GM, or they under role play with them because they see it really as, well, this person's not here for any reason other than the fact that we need a fourth pilot in our lance, we need a helmsman on the bridge, we need a healer in the group, whatever the case is. And they really just use the person purely for the sake of their skill or ability list.
And the interesting thing is, like in our group, it just came so very naturally because Delnus was exactly like you say, Dan. Delnus was just one of the party. He was not the guy that's played by the GM. He was a member of our party. Why would we focus on talking to this guy to try to figure out information above anything else? He's just one of the rest of us. He knows what we know. And when you think of it that way, it just starts to become natural. And so it was never a problem. Yes, there were times I would ask him of specific things, primarily if it dealt with like a religious question. It's like, I don't have that knowledge myself, but Delnus, you're a learned man of the church. What do you know about this other religion that we're coming up against? But again, that's just
That was controlled by a role anyway.
And well, yeah, I mean, you're going to get that same kind of interaction out of role playing anyway. It's just it happened to be that he was there. But it's like you don't abuse it, and you just have to think in that mindset.
And that's an important thing is the game master has to treat this like they would any other NPC. The only distinction is this NPC hangs around the party on a permanent or semi-permanent basis. And I've seen this emerge in game. It wasn't designed at the start of the game. But somewhere in game, let's go back to Battletech. You guys are mercenaries. You hire some people to aid you. Well, all of a sudden, there's a platoon commander for the infantry you have. Well, he's there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dropship captain, whatever. And these are people that are around you guys absolutely all the time. But what I as a game master have to be careful to do is a couple things. First of all, from an ability standpoint, they're balanced with the rest of the party. Secondly, from a knowledge standpoint, they are a character.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own views on the world, some of which are correct. Some of their skills are legit. Nothing is guaranteed. And some of their views and ideas are going to be wrong. And I have to keep an internal consistency there that this is how they view the world. This is how they view the plot. these are their prejudices and presuppositions. This is what they've got right. This is what they've got wrong. And I'm going to play consistently to that. They're not there to give you magic ways out of the plot. They don't know things automatically. They're not always right. And a lot of times, in fact, I will have them give ideas that I know are wrong or give information I know is false, not because I'm trying to use them to manipulate the group, but because to me, that's the character that they are, is based on where they come from. These are their views of things.
Yeah, but you can have your dropship commander and your infantry dude without making them GMPCs. They can just be regular old NPCs. They were in your last Battletech game. You had a whole cast of really cool NPCs that were associated with the company, but you never had a GMPC.
No, and in that case, I didn't need to because the group was of sufficient size. I think perhaps a better example for my more recent gaming would be the Star Trek game that I was running. There were not enough people present to represent the sum of the bridge crew or the specialties available, and in some cases necessary to the away missions. There might be an away mission where they need a geologist, and nobody there was a specialist in geology. And yeah, the Tricorps can give you some of that, but at some point you need somebody who can give you insight on that. There was a point in the game where they needed a tactical expert. They didn't have a tactical expert in the party. And so there had to be somebody, obviously, on the ship that they could call on for that kind of information. Now, these people were not GMPCs because of the way, I guess, that Star Trek is structured, because of the fact that they're more needed on a mission-by-mission basis. They weren't necessarily there all the time, but I could see where if they had a long, ongoing plot, it's possible one or two individuals might be there all the time. Now, this leads into something else, which is you cannot make the person too interesting. They have to be interesting enough to solicit roleplay, but here's the thing. If they are too interesting, they have too many secrets, they get too much of the spotlight, they've got all kinds of really cool plot hooks that the rest of the party doesn't have. As the game master, you are telling a collaborative story with your players that is ultimately the story about how your world, the game master's world, interacts with the player characters.
So you have to let the player characters interact.
Yeah.
And you have to keep the story, at least in my mind, about the player characters. If the story starts becoming persistently about your NPCs, you've lost control or lost focus of where this game ought to
be. Well, you have bored PCs.
Bingo. Because now the PCs get to watch while the GMPC holds the spotlight, reveals their big secrets, and all the other NPCs ooh and ah over what they know. Or the players get to, quote-unquote, fawn. I put that in quotes because we're supposed to be doing, truth be told, they're probably pissed off.
Yeah.
They're supposed to fawn over how important and how special this GMPC
is. Now you're in Baron von Badass territory.
Yeah, because they have such a cool secret. You know, they've had the MacGuffin the whole time. Oh, it turns out they're the chosen one, not one of the players. And this gets into really, really messy.
Neville wasn't the chosen one. That was so artfully set up for the first five books and then just was not finished.
Oh, well. He got to cut the head off the snake. That was pretty awesome.
He came into his own, but
and
if in the period between the publication of 5 and 6 and maybe even 6 and 7.
He is the hottest one of the group, so there's that.
I don't know. I would give that to, like, Vernon Dursley.
What? Wow.
Another Vernon fan. Yeah. Rock on.
Mustaches, yeah.
Yes, well, now we all know that, you know, we won't even get into the fact that...
Am I the only one that of the chicks was, like, all about Luna Lovegood?
No, not at all.
Just because of the fact, like... Because
she's crazy.
She's crazy.
Oh, I love Luna.
She's crazy, but you know she's going to be faithful because she's, like, super innocent, and you know there's never going to be a dull moment because she's... freaking nuts.
Yeah,
Luna. But she's nuts.
I love Luna.
She's nuts in a
harmless way. And she's really sweet.
Yeah, and she's nuts. She's sweet. She's nuts in a harmless way.
She's nuts in a fun way, not a scary way.
Exactly. She's not
like Bellatrix nuts.
Yes.
Yes. Bellatrix was scary.
Yeah, that is very true.
But still kind of hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she'd kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
part of the thing.
The shape-shifting chick was kind of hot, but she made one big mistake, which is her very first scene just about she's there making duck face.
Who?
What?
You're talking about the one that changed her hair color.
Tonks?
Yes.
Tonks was duck's facing in one of the movies?
Yeah.
I gotta go back and look. She
turned her part of her face literally into like a duck's bill.
Oh, really?
So she was there making duck face.
I saw the films as they came out.
In the audience, I hope, got that pun.
I haven't seen any of the films.
I'm drawing nothing
out
here at the table.
I'm sorry. I was more of a book guy.
I like Tonks too. I was very sad.
Yeah.
She
never forget. How do I? That's
right. Do you have like a shirt that has like the date on there or her picture?
No, but
I feel like I need a lighter.
They figured it out. The Battle of Hogwarts was in like 1997 or something.
They also figured out when Ice Cube's good day was.
Do they really? Yes. Like to the day?
Down to the day. Somebody actually reverse engineered like all the things he said, because like he mentioned specific like basketball games and things like that, and all these things only occurred on one day in history, and they figured out when his good day was. Like they could
Did
actually
they know who
it.
All he knew in South Central LA, and then figure out when they didn't die.
They did check crimes. I think crimes was part of it, because they looked for a day that there was like a limited number of homicides. They looked for a day those two basketball teams were playing, and it had the outcome he described, and it had the weather conditions he was
Someone
talking about.
Someone has way that is, too much time.
Yeah, if you Google when was Ice Cube's good day, you will find not only the date, but a full like work.
I've seen the flow chart.
Yeah,
that like lets you figure out if it was a good day or not. Chart. That goes through that song.
Awesome.
That's that amazing. Awesome.
But to me, if you don't have to use your AK, it's a bad day.
Well, you know. Pulling his
I don't
back
think
on
you
train.
Want a real insurgency Red Dawn situation as much as you think you do.
No. I'm still stuck up on killing aliens and cryptids.
Yeah, right.
All right. So GMPC.
Pulling it back in the train. The only real problem I'm sitting here thinking, because I'm trying to, you know, give equal time to John's theory.
Correct.
Theories are unproven.
Oh, no, we're not going here.
We're not going
this
there.
Is theory of gravity theory, not, well, I think purple is the best color theory.
All right, fine. I'm trying to think of any problems that we had, and the only one I can think of, well, there's two. We always forgot that Dullness was there, so if we were having...
But his name was Dullness?
No, nah. Dullness. D-E-L-N-U-S.
I was just saying, is this guy, like, self-aware? Suddenly, I like this GMPC. I am boring. I am controlled by the GM. Ignore me and forget that I'm here. My name
Baron
is Dullness.
Von Bland ass.
Yes,
there's your opposite. But we always be having discussions about what was going on, and it might come to a cogent point where some skill set that he had would apply, and we'd be like, "Wow, I wish we had somebody that could do that." And then, like 10 minutes later, we'd be like, "Oh yeah."
That's because the GM was cross-checking, oh God, I know everything about everything. Do I know this just because I know it, or does Dullness know
it?
And that's really hard to do all the time.
I think that's a good thing, though, and it's a good way to be. I think that that's what you should strive to be.
It's a necessary precaution, but it's so distracting.
Well, I'm saying from the player standpoint. I'm not saying from the GM standpoint. You know, first of all, the GM doesn't interject and say, hello, I've got you're forgetting my PC. That's not what it was. And for us, it was as the players, we were role playing with the other human beings around the table, because we only role play with human beings. We don't role play with aliens. Very pro
that we know of.
And we would do that. We sort of would overlook that GMPC, not intentionally or not maliciously in any way. It would. And again, the GM wouldn't interject himself when it came to the point where we would eventually remember it and get some interaction with them. That's fine. But I think that's kind of what you want to do with that PC. I mean, they don't have to, you know, just because they're not interjecting themselves all the time doesn't make them boring. Case in point with this character that we're talking about, we loved this character so much to the point where there was one story arc where basically
he
was critically injured and almost died. And we spent the next like
3 or 4 sessions
adventure basically trying to save his life because we were struck because we loved this character.
We were devastated.
You know, he was almost an integral part die in that he got to like negative 212 hit points and the GM was like, "Whoa, guys, he's really close to dying."
You'd have to know PW. PW is a very he's an excellent GM, first of all, and he doesn't play it that way.
If he played it that way, I'd put it under Verum called badass. This is the
And that's the case. Dullness, he very well could have died. He went down in combat. We knew he was dying. And it's like, he's over here, he's dying. We had to finish it up, and we were able to get to him before he went negative 10 or whatever it is.
If he died, Dub would have killed him.
And we would have, you know, and yeah, that's the thing. If he died, Dullness would have been dead. Dub is he's a John. You know, definitely
he's a John GM.
He would not kill him. He would not
kill
save him.
All dead.
There might be a good litmus test right there. Is how willing is the GM to let this character die? Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have to kill your darling.
And I don't know that I'd say this has to be the litmus test, but I think it's a good one. Is the GM willing to let this character die?
But then on the flip side of it, too, is in a situation like that, how do you react as a party? That will tell you how you feel about that character. Right. Do you care about this GM NPC or this GM NPC?
Well, and I think you can say, well, the healer's gone and they need a healer.
Well, and that, bingo, I think table banter is a good way of getting a read on this. If the GM NPC is getting their ass kicked and the party's glad, take the hint. If the GM NPC is gone and all they miss is the GM NPC's abilities, take the hint.
Yeah. Wand.
I focus on D&D because that's the bulk of my experience. And I think that oftentimes, this is where this sort of situation comes into play, where what are you missing in terms of a rounded party? It seems to always go back to, say, D&D and or the fantasy role-playing of, well, we're short a healer or we're short a thief. I think it largely depends on the class that you're going to be trying to make as a GM NPC. Some, I think, are just way worse than others to try to do that with because of what your class features would be.
Like, wizard.
Well, a wizard or a thief, I think, are more problematic. Probably a thief, just more in general, because the thief, if you're short a thief and you need thief-like abilities and the GM makes a PC, what's he going to be doing? He's going to be doing solo shit with himself all the time.
And the thief is on the forefront of gathering information.
Exactly.
Scouting ahead.
So you got to think as a GM.
Information.
As a GM, you got to think, okay, maybe this isn't the right class that I should make a PC for. Right. And let's just stay the hell away from it.
We'll just
be short.
A vivisectionist alchemist, because they're better thieves than thieves are. Board community. I'm still playing that guy. I love him.
I think there is one other case where GM PC makes a lot of sense, which is a rotating GM campaign.
Ah, yes.
If we were playing a game where we were all rotating as GM, the GM has to have a PC. And depending on the game, maybe there's a way you can fade that player character to the background. Maybe there isn't. I mean, maybe they're just an integral part of the
party.
Maybe
a PC is a GM PC when the GM is a GM, and then he's a PC when he's a PC.
Yeah, exactly.
Ow.
Which I'll admit is a somewhat unusual circumstance.
That hurt my head.
But I do nonetheless lean in John's direction. While I'm not quite 100% on John's side of this, I do lean in John's direction that if you really can't look at this and come up with, one, a good reason for the player character to be there, two, control what they do and don't know, three, make them interesting without spotlight hogging, and four, get a good reaction from the other actual player characters on this person, then don't do it.
I agree 100% with
you
that.
Can't get all four
I agree
of
with
those
the last
points.
Three words of that statement. Don't do it.
I do disagree with you there on that, John,
because I've seen it done.
I have seen a stellar example of it done well. So that's where I come
from.
I
you've seen one stellar example of it done well. How many bad have you seen?
Honestly,
what is the
value? That's the interesting thing. I've been lucky in the fact that I saw it done well with that GM on multiple accounts.
I'm racking my brain, and having GM'd most of my career, I don't tend to do this very often. I have screwed it up. There are also times that I've done it, and I think I can say as objectively as I can that I think I did it well.
Well, you're different because you were 90% the GM of your game.
Yes. In terms of people that I've played with who have done this, I'm thinking of one example where off the top of my head where it was done excellently, but it was also a rotating GM campaign. Mm. So that may not be necessarily quite the example we're looking for.
Yeah, really, for me, the bad example
He killed his own player character.
What a boss. I like this guy. Do I know him?
That's hardcore.
You might have met him in passing at some point.
Okay.
But he killed his own player character. It was a rotating GM campaign. I say rotating. It was actually him and I just passing it back and forth. He'd run a story arc. I'd run a story arc. He'd run a story arc. I'd run a story arc. And it was during one of his story arcs near the end of the campaign as a whole that he killed his own player character. Hmm. And it wasn't long after that two of the other player characters died. And this is the one we've talked about where mine was the only one that survived. No, I think, all of John's concerns, I think, are valid. I can't sit here and say they're not. But I don't know that I would dogmatically say, therefore, it cannot or should not be done.
The one bad example that I can think of that I had was Barenbod badass situation. And I really consider that different than the GMPC that we're talking about here. I know that, Dan, you sort of define that as one of the two things it can be, but I think it's fundamentally different because most of the time a Barenbod badass is not a persistent character that's like running with the party all the time.
I've been in that game.
Oh, luckily, wait, really? Luckily I haven't.
Oh, yes. I was in a game.
I am so sorry. Yeah,
that's horrible.
Well, let me, you guys are probably going to give me your sympathy on the start of this. I was playing a Ravenloft game.
Oh.
And in that Ravenloft game, the game master was relatively new. He was really intimidated by the boisterousness of some of the characters or the players. And as a result, he felt the best way to control us was we'd all be level one or two. He'd have a GMPC with us who, I'm not making this up, was level 15 to 20.
Oh, holy my God!
And we basically just sat there while this GMPC did everything. And,
oh, my God.
And if we did anything but kowtow to this GMPC and or the villains, we were just annihilated.
That sounds awful.
My God.
It was unbelievably awful.
Sounds like an awesome one shot if done deliberately wrong, but otherwise terrible.
Yeah.
If it was done as intentionally ironic comedy, maybe I could have bought into it. It was not, and it went on for multiple games before finally we just lost our shit and quit.
I have luckily never encountered anything that bad. I have certainly encountered a horrific Baron von Badass.
Yes.
But
most of the Baron von Badasses I've run into have been NPCs and usually enemy NPCs.
Yes.
Enemy or questionable.
At least competitors.
They're this nefarious thing that is, they're the misunderstood bad guy. They're trying to redeem themselves.
If he just had the love of a good woman, he would be a good person. Blech!
No, so, usually they're enemies, sometimes NPCs. Once in a while, they're the guy in the shadow that just teehees at you about your ignorant floundering.
Yes, that guy.
Yeah, that too.
That guy I'm going to punch
in the
mouth.
Worse than the
because that's the GM just wanking himself or herself. Anyway, all right. I think we're going to wrap this one up. Once again, check the show notes for all the places that you can find Sojourn. We'd love your support there. Fear of the Con, of course, is still going on. I'll put a link to that as well in the show notes.
And I have a game.
Yay, Fear of the Con.
Yeah, I got one open slot, but as of right now, I believe I'm running three and playing in two.
Okay.
And I've got one open slot left. I haven't decided what to do with.
I think I have an open slot left, too. If someone wants to come heckle me, I'll be wearing my crown.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, actually, one of the games I'm running, which right now has only one sign up, so I'll go ahead and solicit for more, because if I only have one, I may cancel the event. I'm doing, in first slot, an intro to RPGs. So if you're bringing someone with you who is brand new to RPGs, never touched them before, doesn't know what they're doing, or feels intimidated by playing games in a con setting, this will intentionally be a very, very gentle introduction to RPGs that will teach them through all the basics, presupposing they don't know anything about gaming. So
it have the Lion King soundtrack?
No.
I don't care.
That would be my fifth and sixth slot musical games.
Do you know, there's a whole section of Lion King songs from the Broadway musical. Are those not being considered?
I have seen the musical. We will only be using songs from the movie.
There will be no Scar rape ballad?
No.
The Scar is Hitler ballad is sufficient for my taste.
Yeah.
Okay.
There will be no Scar rape ballad. I've seen both the musical and the movie. I am basing this exclusively off of the movie.
Okay,
Does Scar
fair enough.
Kill a clown?
All right, I'm going to stop.
But he has goose-stepping hyenas walking by in a cinematographic imitation of Triumph of the Will.
Yes.
I'm serious. Go watch Be Prepared. It's awesome.
It is. Yes. So anyway, thank you for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.